The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 1 Podcast.
Hey, pleasure. Good afternoon, and we welcome all of you to the program. It is Monday, the 4th of July, around the corner, and we hope all of you are safe. Wherever you are, we have a busy show on tap. A lot of reaction to what happened in Mississippi over the weekend. A lot of people did not think it would happen, but it did, and we look forward to talking to many of you and get your reaction to the decision by the state legislature there to finally take down the flag that bears the Confederacy. So we'll talk about that. A lot of reaction already this week, and to that, and we'll talk to two guests about that, including the former governor, former two-term governor of the state of Mississippi, as well as someone who grew up in the state, went to school in the state, and is now a political commentator. A couple of guests about COVID as well, an epidemiologist from Atlanta who has some very strong opinions, and then a talk show host who questions whether or not we can have a college football season. Sounds like not much has changed since we visited with you last. So that's how we shake out here on a Monday afternoon. We'll be here throughout the week and look forward to spending time with you as things are really at a transitional period right now. Not much happening. Everyone waiting. We are not that far away from what is expected to be media days and the start of the college football season. Will we get there? Is certainly a question that we've been asking over and over again. We also would like to hear from you at 855-242-7285. That is 855-242-7285. That's always the number here, and a lot of opportunity to get your calls in today. But certainly those two stories, which we were talking about when we went off the air on Friday, are still centerpiece today, and the flag issue I think will eventually abate. The other story I don't think is anywhere near being off our minds. Anyway, so let's get to some calls. We have a little bit of an opportunity before we bring our guests in. And again, I mentioned the number is 855-242-7285. Let's check in first with Daniel, who is in Alabama. Hello, Daniel. Thanks for calling. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. It's good to talk to you. And I'm not going to tell you how long ago I read your first column. That's how long I've been following you. We're about the same age. And I miss you as a journalist. I truly do. You were one of a kind, and loved reading your column. Not sure how many of your international listeners know how many times people in the state wanted to perhaps burn you in effigy. I don't know.
Well, I miss those days, too. They were really some of the most amazing days of my life and career, and it seems like another lifetime ago, but I appreciate appreciate your kind words.
Well, I loved your I did love your column. I wasn't the only one in my family. My dad was still alive back then, to not wind us too far down the road. Let me just say this. Born and raised in Alabama, I love my state. I love my country. My dad, during World War II, as a very young man, fresh out of high school, had to land beaches, Marines on island hop. My dad raised me to know and understand with everything that went on in the 60s. He raised three sons. My brother went to Vietnam. My wife went to Vietnam. My first cousin was in Vietnam. The young Marines that he saw die on those beaches, and he had to land those Marines and go back and get more until there were no more to land. Under fire. My dad never talked about that much until I was a young man, and I guess he thought I was old enough to comprehend what he was saying. My point being, Old Glory flew over those young men. They wore the stars and stripes proudly on their uniforms. The Confederate battle flag was not on those uniforms because those people lost. That's a flag of traitors that committed treason, armed insurrection against the lawful authority of the United States of America. Now, if you want to spin it any other way, you're welcome to, but don't try to do it in a conversation with me because I actually read. The Constitution of the Confederate States of America stated that slavery would never be illegal. It's as simple as that. That flag represents the right to own other people. As my dad so eloquently put it to me, those young Marines gave their lives for every man, woman, and child on this planet to free us all from fascism and dictatorships. That's why they died. And to honor their memories, the way he raised me, he hoped that I could extend that right and courtesy to every man, woman, and child I ever crossed paths with, no matter their color, no matter what church they worshiped in, no matter. They were United States citizens, and those young men and women gave their lives for us all to be free. I'm not even going to touch about the news that just broke, other than to say I'm proud that my son put over 20 years in the military, 5 tours of combat, Afghan and Iraq, Bronze Star on his chest. I can't comment properly on how I feel as a military family to find out the remote possibility that our commander-in-chief shakes hands and hugs a man that paid to kill our troops. So vote for who you want to vote. Fly whatever flag you want to fly. But if you want to honor U.S. troops, look and see who takes their side. And remember all those that died in World War II so all of us could breathe free air. Paul, thank you for everything you do.
Thank you very much, and I deeply appreciate what you said here. It means a lot to all of us. My dad was in that war, too, and you brought a lot of memories back. Fred is up next in Louisville. Hello, Fred.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much.
I've been biting my tongue for about a week and a half now. I was listening to the show when you talked about the gentleman that was killed in Atlanta by the police, the one that took the taser, and you made the comment on your show, why didn't they just take him home and be the end of it? And, you know, years ago when you were in Birmingham, I listened to you, and you talked about a lot about Larry Lankford, and, I mean, you run him down the road, but your attitude seems to have changed. I want to tell you a very, very, very quick story. There was a man that was pulled over for drunk driving one night, and he was pulled over by the police, and they decided to take him home. They took him home, and as they let him out of the car into his house, as they went down the road one direction, he went out the back door to a neighbor's house that he knew always left his keys in his pickup truck, climbed back in that truck, and took off and went down the road. And he was doing really good. He got up to 60 mile an hour on the interstate before he hit that car head on. And he killed my wife and 3 kids because they took him home. Now, Paul, that's the reason we have laws. They go to jail to keep them from committing other crimes. And what happened to that guy, it doesn't matter what your opinion of it is, but the law enforcement was trying to do their job. So before you get on your radio and your soapbox and you've really changed your ideals in life and you're always been the one that jumped on the bandwagon to fire a coach, you know, and now you're on the law enforcement and you're on, well, we should do this, we should do that. Where have you been for the last 20 years screaming about Confederate flags? Well, it wasn't convenient for you, Paul. It wasn't convenient for Marty. It wasn't convenient for any of these talk show hosts. But it's convenient now. So the people that should be raising hell should be raising hell with you and the people. And all you're doing is trying to save your big paycheck. So, again, maybe they should have just took him home. Have a good day, Paul.
Thank you very much. We will take a short break. Back with much more.
Barbasol Shaving Cream, an American original for over 100 years. Close Shave America, Close Shave Barbasol.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back to the program here. Glad everyone has arrived. And we really have an interesting guest coming up next. I've been reading about Dr. Zagbini for quite some time, and he has been quoted quite often as the move toward college football continues, and it is quite a battle. He has a PhD in epidemiology, and he teaches that and works with many not only professional programs, but has written and, as I mentioned, lectured on the subject. First of all, Doctor, thank you very much for being with us. I feel like I know you. I've been reading about you so much.
Oh, that's almost alarming, but very kind of you to say, Paul, and thank you for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity.
No, it's our pleasure. And I'm interested, before we get to some of the obvious questions that you've been asked and we will ask you, I would like to talk a little bit about your background and how you ended up doing exactly what you're doing.
Sure. So I got my MPH in epidemiology, and initially I studied end-of-life care in the U.S. And then back in 2013, I applied on a lark for an analytics gig with the Jacksonville Jaguars and Daniel Adler down there. And they said, hey, we'd love to have you on as a freelance analyst. You're in healthcare. You must know about injuries, right? And I lied through my teeth and said, absolutely. And over the last 7 years, that's what I've dedicated my work to, and I work at the intersection of sports and public health and epidemiology, and honestly, I never saw them colliding in this way, but when they did, I wanted to try and do my part as an epidemiologist to get good, clear information as a sports fan, too, out to the sports world.
And, Doctor, I want to work our way through where we are now because, you know, since sports ended in March, there has been a rush to get back to it, just like every other aspect of society, whether it's opening businesses, restaurants, bars, beaches, everyone knows the drill. So here we are. We're seeing a few sports open, NASCAR, golf, soccer. We're seeing the NBA attempt to find its way to the court, baseball, and ultimately football. I'm really interested, as you have watched all this unfold here in the throes of a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic, as a sports fan especially, what have you thought?
I've thought that, you know, I wish we could have driven the number of cases in this country down lower, and I think we still could if we took a very aggressive approach. But, you know, we didn't do that at first, and now because of the sheer amount of virus that we still have in this country, and in particular in certain areas of the country like Arizona, Texas, and Florida, that's left us in a more difficult position to bring sports back. And even those leagues that I think are doing a good job are having to do so much more work than their counterparts in other countries like Germany or New Zealand or South Korea. So that's overall what I'm thinking. You know, the other thing that we need to think about is that every step we take back towards normality has a risk and a benefit associated with it. So we need to find the lowest risk activities that offer us the highest benefit. I really think that sports, pro sports, with the right plan to really minimize risk, the benefits that come from that can outweigh it. But when it comes to college sports and college football in particular, I'm seeing some evidence that programs are not keeping the risk at an acceptable level, and that's what's worrying me.
Yeah, and the numbers are very high, and even before I get too deep into this, I want to ask you this because I've heard from some people inside the bubble, even though there really isn't a bubble, that believe the numbers are a good thing. And you know where I'm going here. That a school like Clemson, you know, I've heard somebody say, well, maybe they'll end up getting herd immunity. They'll be in good shape once this season starts. I'm particularly interested in your answer to that, as well as the answer to young people are going to be just fine.
Right. So I'm not going to swear on your show, Paul, but within that, I will say a few things. One is the risk to young elite athletes is not zero. We've seen, for example, Rudy Gobert, the first player, as far as we know, in the NBA to get COVID-19, still has trouble with his smell. He just said yesterday with his sense of smell. We've seen Von Miller with the Denver Broncos, who does have asthma as an underlying condition, struggled with COVID-19 and breathing for a couple of months at least. We've seen at least one Olympic athlete say he struggled with COVID-19 for weeks. So the risk is not zero. And also, it's not just death that we're worried about. There could be some long-term lung damage due to COVID-19. There are some worrying signs. This has only been around in people for 7 months. So if you ask me what's going to happen to people who had it in 2 years, that knowledge simply doesn't exist. I can't tell you. But I can tell you that a lot of smart people that I talk to are worried. And, you know, even a minor decrease in lung function long term could be devastating for an elite athlete. The last thing that I'll say is that even if these young elite athletes don't have any bad outcomes, we know that they can still spread the virus to other people, older coaches, older people in the athletics department, older family members. So you're still creating cases in the middle of a pandemic. And I don't like that from a public health perspective. Just thinking about the competitive advantage. Could there be a competitive advantage? Theoretically, yes, but we also don't know necessarily how strong or how long immunity lasts. So you're taking a gamble there too. And in no way do I think that is a good idea or worth it or a laudable goal.
Do we really, I think you've answered it in part, do we really know anything about the immunity aspect of this?
Yeah, we've seen that there is an immune response in at least a portion of people who demonstrate antibodies. So I think we can very safely say that there is some immunity for some period of time. But again, we're kind of hamstrung by the fact that this is a new virus and we're still learning new stuff every day. But it seems reasonable to expect that there will be at least some immunity for some time.
So let's get to the issue that we talk about here literally every day, and we don't need to explain to the audience or to you follow sports, why college football is so different than what the NBA is trying, or even MLB, or maybe even the NFL. But strictly speaking to college football, based on the little information that you've seen already in 2 to 3 weeks of voluntary workouts, as we move toward contact here in a couple of weeks, many are wondering, should we go on and should we have the college football season? So I ask you, you're far more learned than I am. What's the answer?
The answer is I'm very pessimistic. So the thing is, with summer workouts, right now these athletes only came back because you asked them to practice, to play a game. I love that game. I would love college football back. I want to watch my Bulldogs, okay? I do. But, you know, you have to provide a safe environment that doesn't allow for explosive outbreaks. And we have now seen example after example of high-resource programs like the University of Texas, LSU, and Clemson not being able to control this virus with the protocols that they've put in place. I don't know how many more examples we need to show that this is not a safe environment to bring athletes back into, and in some cases, it's contributing to local outbreaks. Even if these cases aren't happening in a weight room, it was still totally foreseeable that you brought students back and they went out to a bar and they got COVID-19. So you're asking them to take on this risk, and in my opinion, I haven't seen enough schools providing a safe environment. And there's no centralized authority that seems to want to mandate that, like the NCAA or even the conference level, like the SEC. They're just releasing guidelines, but not really strict mandates for what you have to do, like regular follow-up testing, which very few programs seem to be doing to catch cases as they occur before they can spread. So if you can't provide a safe environment and they're only back for you to play sports, not even to take classes, then I don't know how you can justify that. And especially when you have over 36 cases at Clemson and you just refuse to shut down. I mean, that to me is really unbelievable.
So you definitely, I mean, you've already said you think Clemson should have shut down with that many cases.
Oh, I absolutely think they should shut down for at least 2 weeks. Probably we shouldn't have workouts the rest of the summer. Once you get into the fall and everybody's back on campus, I think it's a little easier to justify having football on top of that. But then you still have the issue of added risk from travel, spreading the virus from place to place, and the contact that your school is going to be having with other programs that may not have as strict protocols as you do. So they could bring the virus into your team that way. So I think there's a lot of complexities and a lot of concerns. And, you know, if you can't have a centralized authority or any kind of centralization or sequestering, which you just can't do on a college campus, and most programs can't even afford to test more than at max one a week, you know, I'm really worried about the ability to provide a safe environment for these students to play. And if we can't do that, then, you know, we shouldn't mix up the best we can do with what we need to do. And I think we all need to look ourselves in the mirror and ask ourselves if it's going to be worth it if we can't provide a safe environment. A month ago, it was unclear whether we'd be able to provide a safe environment, and I was kind of in favor of giving it a shot. But now I have so much evidence that schools are incapable or unwilling to do that I'm changing my tune.
If you hear the same thing we hear, Doctor. If we end up having a college football season, I realize you can only predict, but you're somebody who looks at numbers, and we have a pretty decent sample, as you just alluded to.
Sure.
What's it going to look like? How bad will it be?
I think you're going to have uncontrolled spread through a number of teams. It's going to depend on a little bit of randomness with which groups of players decide to violate requests and go out to bars. It's going to depend a little bit on how frequently you're doing the testing. If you can test your athletes a couple times a week, maybe you could head an outbreak off at the pass, but you're not going to do that 100% of the time. You might see outbreaks from games, particularly from schools with less strict protocols, going to schools with stricter protocols. I think you're going to see, at minimum, schedule disruptions. You're going to have teams having to quit in the middle of the season. You're going to have teams having to go on hiatus. I think it's going to be an absolute mess if they're even able to start and try to play this season. The scheduling is just going to be a mess.
Final question. I appreciate your time and love to talk to you again. Do you think we'll end up getting to that Labor Day weekend and have a college football season?
Do I think we will, or do I think we should? Because those are two different questions.
Answer it both ways, if you don't mind.
Not at all. I'm dubious that we should. I think we probably shouldn't. But if I had to guess, at least some schools are going to try to play, yeah, and some conferences. And then we're really going to see what happens. And I'm very pessimistic about what comes after that.
Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Dr. Zachary Binney from Emory. Love to have you back. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, Paul. Thank you.
What an interesting conversation. That's somebody who has a PhD in epidemiology, who studies the numbers, who has looked at what's already happened. And that's what he has to say. We'll get your reaction to all of that at 855-242-7285. When we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
We welcome you back. Really glad you are here. And what an afternoon we've already had. Look forward to getting more of your phone calls. And we've had some very good ones already. We'll get some reaction to our guest there. Did anybody see the story about the mayor of Carbon Hill, Alabama? Remember the other day, I think it was Thursday, Nick Saban and his players came out in a video. I think Alex Leatherwood was the genesis of it, uniting for Black Lives Matter. And the mayor of Carbon Hill posted disparaging comments about the football team because they had voiced support for the Black Lives Matter movement. The mayor, Mark Chambers, after putting this out and receiving tremendous criticism, ended up submitting his letter of resignation, according to media reports. The town council has not approved it, but they were having a meeting on Wednesday. He put a Facebook post out saying that he was selling his photos of the Alabama football team of Nick Saban because of their sorry political views. He said, "The tide is done, in my opinion." He has faced other issues in the past. Carbon Hill is, if anybody, I think we've had calls from Carbon Hill before, so it would be interesting to hear what people in that area have to say. Certainly it's in Walker County, north of Birmingham, and been there, and it's always been a pretty nice place. We will get some more phone calls here, and Pat is up next. Hey, Pat, welcome to the show.
Hey, Paul, thanks. I want to talk Georgia football. I talked to an old friend of mine over the weekend, and 52 years ago, his first job was assistant SID at Georgia. He reminded me that there's a gag order on COVID-19 information coming out of Georgia, and I think they ought to be transparent. I got a half a dozen ticket sales plans in the ticket office. There's only one that doesn't stink. And we got five quarterbacks. And the latest one is a transfer portal from Southern Cal, a five-star. Is that right?
That is correct.
One. And then we have another one. And we have one quarterback who has a severe health problem who is probably not going to play. And then we've got another five-star coming out of Jacksonville. And then we have one returning from last year's team. So my question, can any of them, do they have the physical prowess to run the RPO? Do you have any
thoughts? Well, that's a good question. That is a really good question. To me, the one I've heard the most excitement about is JT Daniels from Southern Cal. And again, I'm just giving you secondhand information that you could probably pick up walking down to the town square. There's no way to really know what Jamie Newman has been able to do so far because he really hasn't done anything, but there are some question marks about him, I think. But Daniels is not eligible yet, although I've heard that there's a movement trying to get him eligible.
Do you think that in light of, and this is all assuming that we're going to play, in light of COVID-19, do you think that the NCAA may just have, hey, it's COVID-19, go where you want to go, do what you want to do?
I think they will be more accommodating than they have in the past, yes. I totally agree on that.
Okay. All right. Well, by the way, are you having technical difficulties? Because you're not on my TV station right now.
Well, no, we're not. The SEC network every year does usually they do this at the end of July.
Okay.
They give every school a day to have on the network. It's called the takeover.
This must be Arkansas Day.
Yeah, they moved it up this year. For reasons which I do not know, but I can only speculate. That's why we are not being seen.
Well, I'm going to go sit in the car and listen to you on XM.
Well, thank you very much, Pat.
All right. Bye.
Great to have you on. AC is up next in Michigan.
Good afternoon. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Feinbaum, I do have a bad news I want to... I don't think we're going to have college football at all this season. The reason I say this is because you might have the knowledge more than myself, and I will respect that. I mean, do college players have Medicaid to support themselves in terms of if they have like certain medical condition? Because COVID-19 is a very dangerous situation. So the way I see it, I think NFL is most likely to go on. We're talking about money. Of course, college football requires money too. Everything is a business. But the problem is, I doubt college football will be able to go on as scheduled, or it could be delayed. I will stay as it is. I don't think we're going to have a season. Based on what's going on in Florida and Texas, boy, I don't like it. Because it's the end of June.
Well, I'll tell you what. One thing I do agree with you on. I think the outbreaks right now are making the decision, not so much for college football, but the decision to open campuses for on-campus learning more problematic.
Absolutely, and that's going to be a problem. So who knows what's going to happen, but I'll stick with I doubt we're going to have college football. I know all the boys in the South, they're saying, oh, I don't like what you're saying, AC, which is okay because you got to think about it. Safety comes first. Doesn't matter. I don't care about sports. safety matters. Players, their safety matters too. Mr. Feinbaum, I'm pretty sure you care about your safety too. No one would say no to that.
Yeah, no. Listen, I am very concerned, but all you can do is listen, and everyone is saying something different. And I think you just heard the last guest. I mean, this guy's a professional. I'm a talk show host.
Absolutely,
he raised some pretty serious doubts.
That's right. Well, AC is not just talk to talk. I just speak with facts and proof, because I don't just make things up. And by the way, Mr. Feinbaum, I think it's time for you to retire, sir, because you lost control of your show. All due respect. God bless you, man. Holcomb Horns, let me in.
Man, I tell you what, this has been a memorable day for me so far. We'll take a break. We'll get more of your phone calls when we come back.
Tune in to the ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. Presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily. Available wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back to the program here on this Monday afternoon. Let's check in with Eddie, who is in Florida. Hey, Eddie. Great to have you on.
Hey, Paul, man, how you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Hey, Paul, thanks for taking my call, my man. I hope you had a great weekend. Hey,
we did.
I just want to hit on a couple of things. I don't know who that loser was. Just called, told you that you need to retire. I don't agree with him. I think some of your callers need to retire, Paul. But you're doing a phenomenal job. You're doing a phenomenal job, brother. Hang in there. Hey, Paul, your first caller, my man, he hit the nail on the head, Paul. I mean, I couldn't. Hey, that's a guy I would be glad to call my brother. You know what I'm saying? He talked about the military and he talked about the flag. And as an African American, I feel the same way about the flag. I live in Florida, but I grew up in Montgomery, Alabama. And man, I never cared about that flag, Paul. I hear people talking about my heritage. It's only one flag I'm gonna ever respect. I don't respect the Black Lives Matter flag. I won't respect the Confederate flag. Man, it's only one I'm going to respect, Paul, because of my military. That's the red, white, and blue, baby. So why don't people understand that? None of those other flags matter. Hey, Paul, thanks for such a wonderful interview on Friday with the mayor of Montgomery. I'm so proud to call Montgomery my home with a mayor like that. He was phenomenal, young guy. You know, I hate hearing the word "the first black anything." It's 2020. I'll be glad when we get past that. But it was an amazing interview, and it seemed like, Paul, it's a pattern, man. I'm listening at this pattern. You've been at this thing like 3 months now because of no sports, but it's a pattern going on. And the pattern is, seems like every time you interview a minority, you get these. I want to call them hillbillies. That's what they are. You get these hillbillies between the ages of probably 50 and 65, and they call in, Paul, and they always got some negative to say. And really, that's where your racism is at, between those age groups, like probably 35 to 65, Paul, and these guys are hardened racists. That's what they are, all right? And you can see it, Paul. You can feel it. You just had one that come on and kind of challenge you, talking about you changed. No, Paul Feinbaum ain't here to pull up your shirt and rub your tummy. He's not here for that, to make you feel good. That's not what his show is about, all right? Paul is Paul. And Paul, when you're not talking these guys' agenda, my man, they talk about tuning you out, and I don't know if I want to listen to you. And that's just what we're dealing with right now. I don't know why people don't want to change. But the other thing, Paul, I see that these Clemson football players, I know what Clemson is doing. Like, I know what a lot of these college teams are doing. They're trying to do the herd immunity thing. That's what they're doing, Paul. It's all about money, all right? And these guys are doing that, trying to get ahead of the game. So shame on them. You know, that's why some of them are not transparent. And that second caller you had, he totally missed your point. Paul, you didn't say take my man home in that Georgia. The guy got shot in Georgia, I think it was. One got shot in the back. You didn't really mention anything about take that dude home. What you really meant is let him go.
All right? I just simply asked why he had to be killed. That's all.
Why did you have to be killed when you got all of this information right there? I've never seen anybody outrun those radios yet. Never seen anybody outrun those radios. So I don't understand, you know, but it is what it is, my man. And the last thing I got, Paul, is it seems like I hear a lot of your callers is on this media tip, the media this and the media that. Let me explain something to you guys. This is the same media we've been had for all of our lives, okay? We got a guy up in Washington, D.C., when he won the election, he started attacking the media from the first day, calling them fake news and enemy of the people, okay? If you've been a part of the media all your life, you think about that. Somebody come in at the highest job in the land and start attacking you, calling you the enemy of the people and fake news. How would you do? So these guys just
Eddie, I apologize for running. We're at the top of the hour, but thank you so much for your words and your service. We'll be right back.